ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look. Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them. And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey everyone, as we start this next week's chapter of North Texas versus the World with Jamie, I hope you guys take the conversation as what it is, and I'm sorry that I just cut it off because there is no good place in this conversation to take a break. Like I said, it was just two dads talking. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch. I mean, like, where this kid's mindset was at that age. His dreams have changed, his aspirations have changed, but he realized that soccer wasn't the means to that end for him. And we as parents, how do you view that?
I mean, everybody's going to be different. And I've coached a lot of those guys that are, they know from the time they're seven. I've got one of my kids that's at Jesuit right now, and I had him from the time he was six till I stopped coaching when he was 12. And he knew at 6 years old he was going to go play at LSU. For whatever reason, he committed as a freshman to go play at TCU. But you could always see it in him. There's other kids that I got one kid that's at IMG Academy that I can never get through to him. And it was so frustrating because he was such a good player, but he didn't have it.
Yes.
Hard to explain it, but people that have played higher levels of sport know what that it is. And it becomes a little frustrating to see some of the kids that are even, if you want to put it this way, some of the guys that I play with in professional baseball, that had the most unbelievable talent but didn't want to work. And I'd never got it. And to me, it had to have been something in their upbringing that they weren't driven enough. They were just given that God-given ability, like the Jordan and the Stephen Curry, but they did something with it.
Right.
They worked their ass. And that is just, you know, to me, it's a little sad because my oldest one, he got through that period, 13, 14, 15, is typically whenever, if you're going to quit a sport, 90% of them quit, whatever sport that is. I've seen a lot of the baseball kids do it. But again, that's because they were playing 80 games in the summer. But whenever girls get into the equation, you just never know what the heck's going to happen.
That's what I said was, we have to wait until they hit puberty to figure out what's going to truly be in their future. Because I feel, I can only use my son as an example. Like you said, once they hit puberty, who knows? He might change into a completely different athlete and realize soccer's not my sport, football's my sport. Or mm-hmm. I want to try baseball again, or basketball becomes a sport. Yes, he's behind the curve. And this is where you talked about multi-sport athletes are very important. I remember hearing a quote talking about why soccer needs to be a specialized sport. And someone goes, how many sports do you play with your hands versus your feet? And it's much easier to do eye-hand coordination than foot-eye coordination. And it takes a lot more different training. They go football, it's eye-hand coordination. Soccer, it's foot-hand coordination. That's much harder to overcome. And they go, that's why basketball, football, and baseball players tend to all play the same sports, because it's all the same motion or movement. And I said, that's why soccer is the loneliest sport. They all should be playing on some rec level another sport, because it keeps them moving different body parts, because it helps decrease the chance of injury. And I thought that was an interesting way of justifying multi-sport athletes.
Well, it's funny that you were talking about baseball, football, basketball. I always kid around with my kids because I never played soccer, but I'm like, and this is going to probably ruffle some feathers of some coaches, but I'm like, look, soccer's not even a real sport. You don't even use your hands. Like, how do you use your feet? Come on. It's not even a real sport. Like baseball, you're skilled and you're hitting a 95 mile an hour fastball. You're having to catch, you're using your whole body. All y'all do is just use your feet and run up and down a field. And I am totally kidding when I say that, because then they're like, baseball is just a bunch of fat guys running around hitting a ball. I can kid around with them now because they can give it back to me.
Right. And they understand. And that's the thing, if you look back to our baseball idols that we grew up with, it's like a Babe Ruth. Babe Ruth was not a small guy. And near the end of his career, he was still doing great things and still was a heavyset guy. I remember seeing CC Sebastian when he lost all of his weight. They were worried about how well he would be pitching, because after he lost all that weight in the offseason, he lost like 25 or 30 something pounds. And they were worried that he wouldn't come back the same. He shortly thereafter retired, but that's a whole other story for another day, because it's a different sport. But I look back at these athletes that we were supposed to idolize. I love Michael Jordan. I love Kobe Bryant, because their work ethic was off the charts, and how they saw the sport they played. If you listen to stories about top level athletes across all sports, they all have the same story. Kobe Bryant, I think, said it the best. You'll never be perfect, but you can close that gap to being perfect every day. And I think we as parents hear these quotes and expect little Johnny, little Susie to go out back and be them. But what was their Michael Jordan's, what is it, his failing moment was being cut from the varsity basketball team. Stephen Curry had the same thing. Carly Lloyd, if you're looking at women's soccer, she was cut from either her college team or the women's national team. If you start listening to these stories, what motivated these players to be who they are?
Trust me, Ian, I'm definitely not saying I'm on the same level as any of those people. I tell my kids that I played, I'd say rec, you can call it rec, but basically my dad coached me till I was 14 years old. My first year in select baseball was at 15, and I got cut from the team. And honestly, that is the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because it made me wake up and say, I've got to work my ass off now. And you think you'd be behind the curve at 15, but at that point, you turn into just a different person because of that hurt that you had getting released. And it's the same thing with all the people that you just mentioned. You throw that in there and they don't want to feel that embarrassment again.
Right.
You know, and it drives them to where all they do is eat, sleep, and drink whatever sport. But the biggest difference, again, we go back to how much different culture was back then. There's an old, I've read a lot of baseball books in the past, but George Brett, he was good as a kid, but there was multiple times that he said in his book that he'd get in the car and would have just gotten one hit. And he was used to getting two or three hits every single game. And his dad would just say, "Hey, look, you sit back there and shut up. You disgrace the family today." And I'm like, okay, you say that now, the kid quits. You probably get CPS coming out after you.
Be at your house.
Yeah, but it's just a totally different culture. And what happens whenever our kid faces adversity? Do they quit or work harder?
But do the parents let them quit? And I think that's the difference. We as parents have to understand the adversity of the game, because a lot of parents would let their players quit because they aren't a starter.
That drives me absolutely insane, by the way. Again, old school, you finish what you started. Now, I don't care if you're not playing, if you're unhappy, because my oldest is, you don't remember a team called Sergeant Stripes, but we went through some serious adversity and the team went from being probably one of the best teams to struggling a year later. And he was unhappy. He wanted to leave. And I'm like, no, look, if you're going to leave, you're not playing all next year. You're not going to quit on your team. But I have seen that so many times within the last 3 years, mid-season, kids are quitting. And I'm like, okay, you're teaching your kid it's okay to quit. What are you going to do when life gets hard? You're just going to quit?
Right.
And that, I don't see, how you can actually let a kid do that. But then again, every parent's different. I'm going to never tell somebody how to parent their kid. But to me, that's just, that's my pet peeve, is leaving a team halfway through a season. Or
they leave because they aren't winning. Like and this is the conversation, I don't know if you listened to the episode that was released last week and the second part was released today. It's understanding that it's okay to lose. Like he talked about in his interview that he played his kids 2 years up. And he goes, why? He goes, first, it'll make them stronger. Second, it'll teach them how to lose. And if they stick around after that first year, it gets easier. And it's like, he goes, I'm not like a mean coach. And I know enough people that know him. And he's not from Texas. He's from Utah. And I know enough people that have ran past with him. And they said his coaching style is different than most coaches. He has expectations. He has the drive for them to be successful. But he goes, I'm not going to hold their hands. I'm going to make them uncomfortable in everything they do. And he goes, I'm not doing a yell at him. He goes, I'll get frustrated and I'll raise my voice. But he goes, I'm not going to belittle them. I'm going to just make them uncomfortable in everything they do. And he goes, when they finally get to the point where they're playing, they can handle the losing as well as they can handle the winning. Because they're so used to losing that it's second nature. But when they go back to age and play age, the kids that have survived it will be successful because they understand it's not all about losing. It's not all about winning. Yeah. It's about creating that proper foundation for them to grow from. And part of that proper foundation, this is my interpretation of our conversation, not the actual conversation, because I've listened to it so many times now, it is understanding that the foundation's so important and it doesn't matter if you win or lose. And I love applying this because I see my daughter's team. They play 4v4. They play a diamond formation. And it's funny because they get stampede every single time because they're playing formation. They are not playing herd ball. And I'm thinking, when they go 7v7 in 2 years, they're going to be a force to be reckoning with because they understand their roles on the field. And there's six.
No, you're exactly right. Yeah. I don't remember. My youngest and obviously Hudson, who's an outstanding little player, 2011, they grew up playing against each other. And he does a lot of the one-on-one stuff. It's all, to me, there's a lot of good coaches out there that do skills, and Vigil's really good. Castro's really good. But from a standpoint of being comfortable with the ball at that age, from the ages of say 5 to 9, there's no better place to be than at Alpha Forms. But I do remember a long time ago, he knew what the heck he was doing, but he would always, not always, but he told me a couple of times, I just worry about going to that next level of 7v7. How are these kids that are basically dominating, especially Hudson, dominating 1v1s, how are they going to play at the team within a team setting? Whereas with how your daughter's being coached, it's going to translate because it's more of a passing position-based offense.
And I think I just finished Johan Kroff's book, and he's talking about child development. And it's pretty much just saying, like, you need to go out there and just play with the ball. We can't just have them going to practice every single day. And it's like they have to go play in the park. They have to go play with older kids. They have to go play with younger kids to learn frustration. As a parent, like listening to his book, I feel like I have done some really great things with my son. I need to start doing with my 6-year-old daughter. I think every kid at the age of 10 should start coaching. Go be an assistant coach to a coach. And he started to do that last year. And I think the reason, in my brain, I think they should do it partly because I see the game differently. They understand why that pass is so important to be correct. And then secondly, they see the game differently. Thea's coach said to us one time, it's like the advice she was told from, she plays for Villarreal, and the coach was told that they shouldn't be touching the ball for the first 2 years. 8 years old is when they should be start playing with the ball and practicing games. Practice should just be about body movement. Learning how to control your body. And listening to Johan Kroff's book, he was talking about playing soccer in the street. And he goes, the curb was his best friend because he learned how to pass the ball off the curb. And I'm like, so I had to go look up pictures where he grew up of the curb. And so he's bouncing it off an 8-inch curb, 6-inch curb back and forth between him and whoever or himself, learning how to play soccer. And he talked about how he learned to have balance because he learned how to play soccer in the streets. And you don't want to fall on the ground. I listened to a coach here and he goes, we played on gravel. Your parents hoped you fell in practice, so you'll learn to stay on your feet during games. Right. And I'm like sitting here dying, laughing, hearing all these stories from everyone, learning about how to stay up and stay off the ground and why it's so important. And now I'm watching kids. They're always on the ground. I don't care what age group they're at. They're always sliding or falling to the ground and flopping. And then there's that video going through social media right now. When they yell the name Neymar, they all fall down to the ground, start screaming. And I start cracking up laughing because it's polar opposite depending on where you grow up. And how every great coach I've ever heard say you stay off the ground, you work hard, and you play. And it's like you can't play as a passive player. You have to play as an aggressive, conscious player. And you don't even have to be mean. You just have to be assertive.
It's funny. I listened to Vigil talk, and he said something that resonated with me a lot due to the time frame whenever I grew up. He was talking about the kid saying, hey, I need water.
Yes.
I need some water. And he said, where's the water at? The water's over by, it's off the field. Can you get better by being off the field? Yeah, he said something like that. And I was just like, I haven't been to him yet. I think we've crossed paths once or twice. But he just became one of my favorite people by that line he said. It's like his old football coaches were waters for sissies and things like that. But he does make a good point. Yeah, it's hot. It's hot for everybody. But if there's one kid that wants to go get water, you don't want to get Wally Pipped. I don't know if you know who Wally Pipp is, but he's the guy that asks for a day off and his backup was Ty Cobb. So he basically lost his job for 3,800 games. I totally respected what he was saying whenever he said that. It was refreshing to hear that from the coach.
Dylan, if you look at his clientele that he's coached with, he has the Scott brother, Michaelis. He plays for North Texas. I can't remember which Scott it is. And then he has Thomas. I can't pronounce his last name. He played for North Texas, but he played futsal over in Europe for years, tried out for North Texas last year, made the squad, but he works with Dylan on a regular basis. And him and I had some great, in that interview, we had some great chats, and it made me think back to some of the coaches. I have a coach that says, no, you can't get water until everyone else gets water. And he goes, I'm not doing a hurt your kids. Like Dylan said, like, you have to have that moment to grow. And if you're not work through the difficult parts, the easy parts won't be easy. They'll be the hard parts, and the hard parts will be your failing point. And as parents, we have to learn to teach our kids this. We use this as an example. I think there's two forms of coaches berating kids. I think there's a fine line between being abusive and being helpful. A kid should never leave a soccer field in tears from being yelled at. Especially under the age of youth 14. I'll put an age limit on it. Because under that age, they're still developing. Their frontal cortex, whatever it's called, frontal lobe is not developed yet. And that doesn't happen until they're 25. So they still aren't mature yet. But this form of development's not there. And if you look at culturally speaking, you'll go watch certain cultures play on the pitch, and all you hear is that coach screaming and yelling at the kids. And then you go look, you look next to him, and you have a coach that's barely saying a word. And I've always wanted to see the stats of how many of those kids make it beyond the age of 12. Because the one that doesn't say a word, where is he getting on them during halftime, or is he getting on them at practice, or is it just watching them be kids and trying to coach them the best they can? And then you have coaches where it's somewhere in between, where they will say something and be loud and vocal and let them go and be, and game's over.
It's right, interesting. That's kind of the way it should be. The game's over. Forget about it. I try to tell my kids, especially after a tough game, think about it for a little while, then go ride your bike, go to the park, do whatever you want to do, forget about it. Tomorrow's a new day. That's the greatest. It's the greatest part about sports is there's always tomorrow. But then you think, you're like, what if there is no tomorrow? I had one of my, I think it was Pete Ingavilla, I played with him 1 year, and somebody said, was kidding around and said, play this game like it was the last game you're going to play. And then Pete was like, it was Pete or Casey Kendall. And he goes, this is the last game I'm going to play. F this. I'm going to the bar. Are you really serious? This is the last game I'm ever going to play. I want to play.
Right.
And he was totally kidding around.
But that was the advice I heard and was given to think about was, think of it as the last, you should be touching that pitch or whatever sport you're playing or whatever you're doing, going into work, like it's your last time ever having to do it. And are you going to go do a half-assed job, or are you going to go do the best job that you can do? And you never know when that last day will be of playing a sport because of an injury or whatever it may be. If you're not giving it your all, as my son's current coach has told him, if you want to go play another game after you're done with your current game, you haven't worked hard enough.
Exactly.
And that's my son to a T. He wants to go play another game. He's ready for the next game. And
that'd be nice to be young and have energy.
I have no clue. I'm dying after 20 minutes of playing with him. And how do we train our players to have that perspective? And I don't know if it's something that they naturally grow into, or if it's something they're taught, or if it's just something that's naturally innate into them. You don't have to teach. It's just who they are. And I don't think there's enough kids out there with that drive, because at the end of the day, they aren't shown it. It's okay to think your coach is being mean to you because he's called on you 16 times in a practice, but have you truly screwed up 16 times in the practice to be pointed out? Or maybe he's holding you to a different level because he knows you, the expectation that you have as a player. And I don't think parents take that into consideration either. And it's one of those things I love having this conversation about, because I think my view is the coach, the player that's in front of them, not the parent. And I think too many coaches today are now coaching the parent that's on the sideline and not the player on the field.
And I tell you, I've mentioned Kevin's name a few different times, and I mentioned he's a hard ass, and yeah, he yells. He expects perfection. Now, granted, he knows he's not going to get it all the time. If you expect perfection, it lets the kids know what they need to do to get there. Half-assing it in practice is not going to do it. But the problem with that is, and I've spoken with him a few different times, the parents have changed so much, not necessarily the kids. People leaving in the middle of the season, people getting their feelings hurt because he got taken out of the game. And I'm like, look, he's an equal opportunity ass chewer. If you don't come to practice, you don't get to play. You don't get to start. Right. No matter who you are. My kid's been there. The other top kids have been there. But he does not like messing with the parents. So whenever you're talking about having to coach the parents in a way, some coaches can't do it. SC Dallas can get whoever the heck they want for the most part. But they don't talk to the parents, and they don't care if they've got 27 guys on the roster, only 18 are, you know, traveling on a weekend. And if you're one of those, you know, six or seven, eight kids, sorry, get better. It would be hard for me to coach and have to leave kids behind. Some people don't care. But yeah, getting back to the coaches having to deal with the parents, that's just, I feel like we've been banging on us as parents this whole time. But I think a lot of that really does, you know, some of the problem that we do have, it directly comes from how we raise our kids. And trust me, I'm no angel when I say some of the stuff that I'm saying. I've been there, done that, and I'm the main reason why my first kid quit baseball. I pushed him way too hard, way too early. So I get it. But a coach yelling is not going to affect me. Degrading a kid, yeah. No, I don't agree with that. But it's like every year when we get players in, we're like, look, Kevin is very passionate about what he does. So if he can't take, he's gonna yell a little bit, he's gonna praise, but at the end of the day, he wants what's best for your kid.
Right. Yeah. I think that we talked about it earlier. It is parents not understanding the difference between expectations and I know there's more than one way of getting more out of kids, but it goes back to that whole, my whole mantra as a parent, it's even doing this podcast, it's finding the right coach for your player, not for the parent, but for the player. Because what might work for me as a parent might not be the complete opposite. You might need a coach that's more intellectual conversation for your player to be successful than barking at them doing something. And maybe, and that goes back to, at some point in time, they have to get used of a coach, unfortunately, yelling at them and maybe calling them out when they make a mistake. Because at the end of the day, when you're sitting in a meeting and you screw up big time in the real world, I'm sorry, but what, you're then go sit there and go back to your parents and complain how mean your boss was to you? Right. At the end of the day, it gives you life lessons. It gives life lessons of structure and expectations and things along that line in an avenue of a sport. And I think it's great that they can learn it there. It's just a of where you're learning it from. I think there is a place in our society to hold expectations. I think sports is one of the best way to teach how to stay motivated, how to fight for a dream and chase for something. And you made a comment saying we're picking on parents. Most of the people that are probably listening to this are parents and trying to find what's the best thing for their child. And at the end of the day, I won't be the first. I won't be the last to admit it. I'm probably the number one person in my kid's way of being successful. And knowing that is important, and figuring out how to correct that problem at the end of the day is the only thing we can do.
You sound like my wife. My wife is, there was a time 2 or 3 years ago, and I'm no angel on occasion now because everybody has bad days and your kid sucks. And, you know, you're like, you should have worked harder. You jacked around all week and didn't do anything. But she's always like, you're going to be the reason why they quit, because I'd be so hard on them. This was a few years ago. I've gotten a lot better. But he's like, you're going to turn around and all of a sudden they're not going to be playing. And it's going to be because of you, because you remember what you did with Kate in baseball. I'm like, yeah, the issue is I'm such a competitor, you know, right. And I want the best. And I know what it takes to get to that level, to the top level. And no matter who you are, 9 times out of 10, your kid's not going to listen to you. You know, it's just not going to happen. I dealt with it with both my kids in baseball.
I may sound like your wife, but I'm just like you.
yeah.
I say the right things, but I can't do it.
No, but I just wish more, and I know it's so tough, but I don't know what you've done for Landon and your daughter. The very beginning, you got to find a coach. The problem is you have all these clubs, and I'm not going to name out anyone in particular because they all have DA or had DA or MLS or
they all have the upset leagues. Yeah.
They're trying to get kids in there when they're 5 years old. And I'll just say it for my youngest, the clubs is like, you got to get in DA now. So you get in the system. And I'm like, and then he would turn around and say, and I'm not going to mention this person's name, but he'd be like, the next sentence was, well, at 16 anyway, it really doesn't matter. They're going to go out and find the best players anyway.
Right.
At 7 years old. So that by the time they turn 15, they're already known, but yet you're going to go to Oklahoma and get the best kid from Oklahoma.
Or California or Florida California. Or wherever. Yeah. And this is the thing. It's my biggest gripe now. And the thing that I push as a parent, it's fine. Like I said, it's finding the right coach. Whoever's going to meet my criteria. So I always say I want a coach that has about a 500 record, because that means they aren't in the wrong leagues where they're just crushing everyone and they aren't getting their butts handed to them every single time. Now, I hope in tournaments my coach is honest when they're going to tournaments, and this is something I'm struggling with as a parent now, because my son's current coach goes, I'm not going always in to win a tournament. I want them to do what they need to do to be successful. He's told us, he goes, I don't care if they lose 16-1. 16-0. He goes, if they did exactly what they were supposed to go do in that game and they did their best the whole game and they still lost, it's a win. And I'm like, finally a coach I can agree with, but I can't agree with the tournament stuff because that's a lot of money for a short weekend. But I get what he's saying. It is, how do you get the kids to go out there to perform like they should at the level that they're at? And I always joke with people, it's like, you never know what kid's going to show up. Is it the kid in practice or the kid that's going to show up from practice for the game? Or is it the game player? Because there's a huge difference. And I don't understand the difference. I think part of it, it's like the coach says that they don't care if they win or not. So they don't have the drive to win. I don't know if that's the case, but he's going to ride them because they aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And at the end of the day, how do we as parents... And I always have to phrase this for myself. It's like, I am going back to what you're talking about. I'm the person that instantly, we have a 2-minute drive from practice and he probably gets a 5-minute conversation, 2 minutes of everything he did wrong in that 2-minute drive. And I know it's not the right thing to do, but the only thing I get on him is his hustle level, because that's the only thing I can truly ride him about at this point in time now, is how hard he hustles. I can't teach him how to do the soccer skills. Like the other day I was trying to show him how to do something and I can't do it in full motion in game like speed, because I'm not that talented, but I know he's talented enough to do it. And right. It's like, he's giving me all this attitude and I'm telling him he's doing it wrong. So I finally broke out my phone. Okay. This is the video that you're supposed to be doing. And this is what you did. And I'm showing him on the phone. He goes, okay, you're right. I'm not going to be a successful doing what you're asking me to do. And I think we as parents have to be careful, because I was given the advice is to push Lennon as hard as I can until he breaks. And by breaks is telling me I'm talking too much. to him. And him and I have had this conversation all the time. And so if I'm saying something to you, or if you don't like what I'm saying to you, tell me to be quiet and listen to music. You're not doing a hurt my feelings. And at the end of the day, that's what it's at. And I think we as parents need to learn that balance. I still haven't learned it, and I still will struggle. But
yeah, we all do. But attitude and effort, those are the two things you can control. Everybody's going to have bad days. You and I have bad days at work. It just happens. But give me a kid with good attitude and good effort. I'll take that kid over the kid with bad attitude and better effort or better skill than what the kid with a better attitude has. I can work with that. Again, it goes back to, okay, what coach is going to be best for the kid? Unfortunately, parents, for the most part, think, I need to get him on the winning team. And it drives me absolutely insane whenever I've got friends and they're like, well, yeah, he's on, you know, Dallas Texans MLS. And I'm like, yeah, but he's not playing. But yeah, they won the national championship. They've done all these things. And I'm like, and I don't mean to just say the Texans, but it's okay. But did your kid progress and get better? Not just, did we win games? No, there's a time that you need to win games.
Right.
And it's not from 5 to 15, or shoot, probably even all the way through. College coaches want winners. Like the old Singletary, I want winners. I want people that want to win.
And that's what they're there for, because they're fighting for their job. And if they're losing, they'll be out of their job. And I don't think, if they don't have the correct mindset going into it from a young age, they will not understand that when they go to the next level. It's, oh, we always had fun when we played well, and we were always winning. It's fun when you're winning, but when your scholarship is on the line, or whatever it may be, is coming down to the winning factor. I don't think kids necessarily understand that. And I don't know if you can't really teach that at a younger age, because the understanding of it's not there. But I heard the other day, like, we shouldn't be keeping score until 14 years old. And I'm like, wait, what do you mean? Does it really matter? Are they getting a scholarship at 10 years old to go play somewhere? Does it really dictate how good that player is? If they aren't keeping score, then how do you know what level they're playing at? And they go, you'll see it. And when you start getting kids that are getting better, you just have to change the groups that they're with. And I go, but that's not the pay-to-play model then. That doesn't work with inside the pay-to-play model that we currently have. I go, you as a coach know that if you're not winning, parents will leave. And they go, yes. But at the same time, I don't care if we win. And they go, I want us to win. I'm super competitive. But at the end of the day, if at 10 years old, they aren't understanding what to do, winning doesn't matter anymore. Because when right. In 2 years, or in 4 years, what is it, 3 years, when we go 11v11 and they can't play the game because they don't understand the fundamentals, all that winning was wasted because they can't transition into the new format. And it's, okay, I get what you're saying. And that goes back to Dennis Genis said to me, the percentage of games played. So if you're playing 50 games until the age of about 12 or 13 years old, only 8 of them matter in a year. Only 8 have score. Everything else is based off, are you performing what you need to be doing? Doing your set pieces correctly? Doing 1-2s? Keeping possession correctly? Are you tackling correctly? Are you earning points in the other systems and not so much putting the ball behind the net? And the rest of the world is having this mentality somewhat to a degree also. Bigger, stronger, faster wins you games. But in the real world of soccer, it doesn't apply that way. I can't say about baseball because I only played in high school.
Same way.
And
it's the same way. The pay-to-play model is, it's going to keep us from ever being any good at soccer, in my opinion, at the international level anyway. We've got way too many good athletes here in the United States to not to be able to put together 22 guys that can have, you know, literally the best athletes in the world and that are bigger, stronger, faster. But, you know, what are you going to do if you've got a kid you can't afford to play soccer. He's decent at football. Football, you get 95 scholarships out of college. Soccer, until maybe this coming year, where they only have 10 for Division One, and they carry 30 kids. I don't know if they're changing that rule or not for certain D1 schools. But what do you do? Do you, struggle to play rec soccer because you don't have any money? Or do you go play, football?
Going back to what you're saying is figuring out the process and having these kids do what they need to do and have the things that they need to have scholarship wise and things along that line. It's hard because you're right. They give out how many, they just released, they're allowed to do more scholarships now, but at the same time, they can only carry a roster of 18 for a game, for a soccer game. And so how many of those kids will be technically on scholarship, and how much scholarship are they really getting? They just increase the number of scholarships they're allowed to give. Doesn't mean they have the funds to give that scholarship. And I think that's what people were so excited for, that they have recently announced that, oh, now you can have this many scholarships, and all of a sudden it's not really, that's not how it works.
That just opens up Pandora's box with the transfer portal.
Yes.
Because now you're going to get more junior college, more European, more South American players that are going to be taking up the scholarships. I don't know how good that's going to be for the high schoolers, because already it's saturated with Europeans and South American kids for the most part in college. But, whenever we're talking about the pay-to-play model and all that kind of stuff, whenever I did start that site, that was one of my directions I wanted to take that into. And I was telling Alan with Team Player that my goal was to make, either through North Texas Soccer versus the World or by a different identity, to make it a nonprofit and set up different soccer sites in the inner cities to try to be able to let some of these better athletes enjoy soccer. Because, quite frankly, and my thought was like to have a Vidral come in there once a week to work with these not as well off kids to get them to love the game. Or that was my goal, but then I got tired of people.
It happens.
No, not so much that, but just time wise. I didn't realize what it took to run a nonprofit, and
it's a full time job.
Have the time. And I wasn't ready to get rid of what I'm doing.
And the pay-to-play model, I think, can work. It just has to, I think it honestly has to change with parents. I think parents have to be better educated and better being willing to be educated. And I think, because that's what happens. We talked about all the Alphabet League soups earlier. And the problem with them is that they have such great marketing. If your kid's not playing in this league, they'll never go to college. Well, that's not true. Or they'll never be seen, or whatever it may be. And I think that is such a backwards form of thinking when it comes to this game, because they don't have to be part of those. If a player is truly a grinding player, they will be seen. And we as parents have to understand at how to get them seen. I think there's some really good books out there on this, on how to get your players seen without having to spend a fortune. I don't know if you follow Kyle Wilson, the angry soccer coach, at all on Instagram. He talks about this, like his parents had spent $82,000 for him to play soccer. Could we have done it cheaper? Why should it cost $82,000 for someone to go play soccer?
Right.
And especially here in North Texas, when we have some of the best teams, you go play in ECNL, you get put in a different bracket. I guarantee you, you're going to be playing a North Texas soccer team in that ECNL game at some point, trying to get to the finals.
Yeah, and that's especially doing it at such an early age. Sometimes you want the kids to experience it, but at the end of the day, these 2010s are not going to be on anybody's radar, at least until next year.
Right.
Maybe the year after, because if they're that good, somebody would have already got an eyeball on them and sent them overseas or whatever.
Because they'll be playing for a top club in the area and being on a full ride scholarship.
I don't know what exactly some of these people think, but it's not my concern.
And that's the thing. So I'm going to ask my favorite question, and we can wrap this up. Who has been the greatest influence on you as a player, a coach, and as a soccer parent?
As a player, it was Pete Rose. Just because I was born in Cincinnati, my dad and everybody was from Cincinnati. So I, even through my early ages, I was a big Red Machine person. But and it all goes back to what we originally started talking about was Hustle. What was his name? Charlie Hustle. The guy, take whatever you want to think about him betting on baseball, or which obviously he did, but just the way he played the game. Just balls to the wall and just didn't care what anybody thought about how hard he played the game.
Right.
Question number two, as a coach,
yep.
That's twofold. Obviously my dad, because he was a lot like me. He didn't grow up playing baseball, but he was always out there to throw with me, throw me BP, whatever. But then also a guy by the name of Sam Carpenter. He was my Sam Carpenter / Steve Adair, rest in peace. Kind of coach it that, for instance, whenever you're talking about you don't have to go to all these showcases or out of town and spend all that money, he's very well known. We always had the best teams as the Dallas Mustangs. And he basically just said, hey, where do you want to go to college? And I gave him a list of schools. He jumped on the phone and called them all. And before you knew it, I signed a full ride at Tennessee. That was just one of the trips that I went on. But, and I say that, and there's been other people in my life, and that's why I was at coaching baseball. I've always wanted to give back. Because nobody, and I will say this because I've written Sam and been to lunch with Sam quite a few times. If you're not playing, in my opinion, because I've had it happen to me 3 or 4 or 5 times, kids that would go off to college and either play or not play baseball, they would get done with college, and out of nowhere, I'll get a Facebook message or a text and say, hey, I just want to say thank you. And I'm like, thank me for what? And I'm like, and he said, I wouldn't be the person that I am today if I didn't have you back when we were 14, 15, 16, pushing me and teaching me exactly how to be as a person, work hard, always give it your all, be a good teammate, good person. I look at him as being one of the most influential persons just because we didn't have to pay a lot of money back then because I didn't have a lot of money, but he was always willing to do extra. And I think that's what took me so long to stop coaching baseball. Was I wanted to give back to the kids because I was given that same opportunity. What was the third part?
As a soccer parent, who's been the greatest influence on you?
Kevin Smith. And it's maybe because he's exactly like I was as a coach. But we've gotten to be, you know, and regardless of my kids' state, ever leave there, or which I don't think he will, but he's just taught me a lot about not just the X's and O's, but maybe it's because he's just too much like me. He's a hard ass. He demands, he wants perfection. He wants hard work. Just an old school coach. So it's that to me is exactly what I'm looking for as a dad. Now, if my kids ever get tired of it, then they can make up their own mind to leave. But yeah, he's been a, you know, outstanding friend / coach.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. Sitting down with Jamie was a nice change of pace for me, like I said earlier on, and it was fun. It was a different conversation. And when we got done, we talked probably for another 30 minutes afterwards, if not more.
realizing we could have talked about another 30 or 40 different topics probably for another hour or so. And I truly believe this helped me as a parent because it didn't make me feel so isolated or alone having these conversations. It made me feel like I'm just a few years behind some of these parents, and because my kids are not that old. And when you look at it from that perspective of there's time to grow, time to mature as a parent, as being a soccer parent, it's great. It's a great experience. Something I wouldn't change. And I feel like this conversation had so much more depth to it than we both originally thought. I hope you all will take what he has to say and what we talked about to heart and enjoy it and learn from it and take your own experiences and learn from it itself. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on. Give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.